From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, which means it's time for our reporter roundtable. Today we'll be talking about what's been making news in the Quad Cities. For that, we're joined by Brady Johnson, news director at WVIK Quad Cities Public Radio. Brady, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Happy to be here, Brian.
Also with us for the first time is Daniel Beathers, news reporter at the Quad City Times. Daniel, thanks for making the time to be with us today.
Good to be here.
All right, Brady, I'm going to start with you to talk about stories related to the mass firings in the federal government and how those effects are trickling down to your part of Illinois. Recently, hundreds of workers at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and National Weather Service were laid off. There's a Weather Service branch in the Quad Cities. How was it affected?
Yeah, so when I heard that there were mass firings involving the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Weather Service, we reached out to NOAA for comments. We didn't hear back, but fortunately, Illinois 17th District Congressman Eric Sorensen, who lives in Moline, provided a statement to us that at least six employees at the Quad Cities branch were fired. And I know this week two separate judges ruled that the probationary workers should be reinstated, but it remains unclear at this point whether or not these six individuals will be allowed to come back to the National Weather Service.
It's interesting. He was a weather forecaster on TV news, I think, before becoming a congressman. Do we know yet, or maybe we don't know what positions they held there?
Yeah, they couldn't provide any information on the positions, and NOAA has been unable to return any of our comments or any of our requests for comments on these positions.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that story is playing out elsewhere as well in a similar way. Excuse me. Daniel, I'm going to turn to you now. The city of Moline is reinstating a grocery tax. What's the reasoning behind that? What's the story there?
So the city of Moline is actually following several other cities in the area who have already reinstated their own grocery taxes, and that would be Rock Island, Illinois, and East Moline, Illinois. Moline's reasoning for reinstating its grocery tax is more that the federal government is in a period of uncertainty and will be unable to provide some grants that the city of Moline relies on going forward. It's not uncommon for municipalities like these to rely on tens of millions of dollars of grants and other programming from the federal government. And Moline, while they did agree with J.B. Pritzker's initiative to sunset the tax on the state level by 2026, they agreed with his reasoning that it is a regressive tax and that it taxes a basic necessity rather than a luxury item or an incremental tax based on wealth. They were unable to get rid of that source of revenue, especially with risk assessment from city staff saying that community block grants are at serious risk of being cut, which the city of Moline relies on for about $1 million of revenue, which is comparable to the grocery tax revenue.
Interesting continued fallout from this federal cuts we've been seeing. Is the idea to wait until the state sunset actually takes effect and then Moline's would kick in, or could there be both for a while? I forget the timeline on this.
No, the idea is only to instate the tax after the sunset. So this law would trigger when the state tax sunsets. What isn't clear is whether the state will continue to collect the tax on behalf of municipalities or if municipalities will now have to do it themselves. But the tax will continue to be a 1% grocery tax, just now under municipal authority.
Okay, so I guess people buying groceries won't actually feel a difference in their bill. It'll just have a different, back end administratively, perhaps. Okay, interesting story. All right, Brady, let me come back to you. And this is yet another story where we're seeing federal fallout in terms of funding affecting local projects. There's a museum project in Galena that apparently has been affected by the freeze in federal funding. What's happening there?
Yeah, so the Galena Joe Davis County Historical Society has been planning to build a new museum campus because they're currently housed in a historic mansion, so they're unable to provide any HVAC updates or ADA accessibility, which hurts the museum, according to the executive director, Tessa Flock, who says that a lot of the artifacts are on the second floor, so a lot of people are unable to go up there. So they were planning to build a new museum campus, and they received a $1.8 million grant from the U.S. Economic Development Administration back in 2022, a matching grant. They were able to match it, but when Trump took office back in January, a week before they were ready to provide a bid or award a bid to start construction this year, they were told that that grant was on hold. And a couple weeks later, they were told it was still active, but it was still in the process of being reviewed, and they were given no timeline. And that was only one of the grants that they were provided by the federal government, the other one from the Institute of Library Services and Museums for about $570,000. That was also a matching grant, and we have tried to contact that agency and haven't heard back. Likewise, the Historical Society has yet to hear from them, so they don't know if they will be receiving that. And it's also affecting an Illinois tourism grant that they received that's $450,000, and that has to be utilized to be reimbursed by June for construction. And now that this is on hold, they're unsure how this funding is going to affect them. This is a $10 million project, and these federal funds were vital in getting this project completed.
Wow. I think we're going to just continue hearing stories like this again and again as people are struggling to figure out exactly what is happening in Washington and how it's rolling downhill here into Illinois. So, all right, Brady, I'm going to stick with you because the Quad Cities branch of the National Association of Letter Carriers recently held a rally. What were they rallying for?
Yeah, so Branch 318, which covers Moline, East Moline, Morrison, Prophetstown, Aledo, and Geneseo, they were rallying and protesting this past weekend against Elon Musk and the Trump administration calling to privatize the United States Postal Service. They have been working without a contract for 500 days, and they're going to be seeking arbitration on this Monday. But that's not why they were protesting. They were worried that they were going to be losing their jobs as all these other agencies are under fire at this moment. And they got the idea from other protests that have been happening in the Quad Cities to protect diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and programs. So they wanted community support because they can't strike being a federal employees. So they had around 200 people come out this past Sunday to help show their support that this is a vital service that shouldn't be privatized.
All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We are talking about stories making headlines today in the Quad Cities as part of our Friday Reporter Roundtable. My guests are Brady Johnson, news director at WVIK, Quad Cities Public Radio, and Daniel Beathers, news reporter at the Quad City Times. Daniel, the city of Rock Island is going to be getting a cannabis dispensary and a gas station. What is the significance of these? What did it take to get to these points? To this point, I should say.
So it's an interesting story behind the relocation of this cannabis dispensary to Rock Island. It was actually part of a business transaction gone wrong, or at least the businesses owned by Matt Stern in Milan were part of a business transaction gone wrong, and there was a dispute with some other cannabis companies in that field. And so as part of that, he is relocating the facility to Rock Island, coming from that controversy. And it's actually right next to Milan Bottoms, which is a sensitive ecological habitat. And the city is very much pro-development at this point. According to my interviews, Mayor Mike Tomes in particular is in favor of this development, and the city council generally seems to be as well. The city did give them a $6 million tax incentive through a TIF, which would play out over years and possibly decades, where the development would be able to submit building expenses that would be reimbursable through TIF revenue. And this TIF covers the area of the cannabis dispensary and several other developments nearby. So the TIF is an essential ingredient in this cannabis dispensary coming to the area.
You mentioned, well, I can't forget the name of the term you use, but conservationists, I gather, are unhappy about this sensitive ecological area?
Yes, we have activists, environmental activists, who are sensitive about the bald eagle populations nearby, particularly bald eagles night roosting during the winter months. they argue are prone to disruption from nearby human developments that would be noise and light. And in particular, the truck stop part of the development is a problem for these activists. But there is also several other aspects to the debate and several other endangered species that could potentially occupy Milan Bottoms because they... just across the river in Nahant Marsh, we have several endangered species that, you know, the activists are arguing could easily be right across the Mississippi here in Milan Bottoms. The development itself includes a 6,320 square foot cannabis dispensary, which is not heavily opposed by those activists. They're more concerned about a truck stop, which would include 20 gas and diesel pumps apiece and 10 Tesla charging stations, a convenience store, and a full service car wash and ATM facility.
Not a happy time for the Eagles, I guess, if you have all those trucks coming and going at all hours of the day. Well, I guess this is, how's this for a segue? Speaking of transportation issues, Daniel, there have long been talks about a passenger rail service from Chicago to Moline. What is the latest with that?
So it's not looking necessarily ideal for the Quad Cities shot at direct rail to Chicago. In particular, there has been some controversy between Iowa Interstate Railroad and IDOT. There has been difficulty negotiating between IDOT Ameren and a Iowa Interstate Railroad, which owns 50 miles of track needed for that direct route, but will not invest its own funds to upgrade the track. There's been about $400 million secured by between the state of Illinois and the federal government for this project, which would be, again, a direct shot to Chicago. But they're about $100 million short if Iowa Interstate Railroad will not chip in for the upgrades needed to make passenger travel safe on those rails. They are looking at alternatives of skirting around, basically, Iowa Interstate Railroad's segment of track. And for those alternatives, less upgrades would be needed. They would only fall short about $7 million with current funding. But that would, again, add an hour of transit time to Chicago because it would not be a direct route to Chicago. They are considering going to Metra rather than Amtrak for possible change in negotiations, but it all depends on if the state legislature can spot them $100 million or $7 million.
Well, we will see what happens there. Brady, just a few minutes left in our time together. We have previously talked about the city of Davenport being in trouble over settlement payments involving the former city attorney. What is the latest in that investigation?
Sure. The latest is Iowa Auditor Rob Sand initiated a re-audit of the city of Davenport after this came out. And they are currently seeking to review these closed-door session recordings and meeting minutes of the supposed settlements that were approved. And this week, he filed to have the Iowa Attorney General's office removed as counsel because allegedly they agreed on a brief that would allow the auditor to receive these recordings and because they could see attorney-client privilege recordings, and they've argued that instead this is a procedural argument and that they would lose before the Supreme Court if they were arguing that this was for attorney-client communications. My apologies. So that is currently up in the air. The district judge prior to this was going to review them to see whether or not they would fall under attorney-client communications privileges, but the city of Davenport appealed to the Supreme Court, and at this point those have been still within the city, and they're just waiting to see whether or not the Supreme Court will take up Auditor Rob Sand's brief or the Attorney General's brief, or just neither of them, and we're just currently waiting to hear what they have to say.
It is a complicated story, isn't it? Daniel, just about a minute left, and maybe not time to do full justice to this, but all five mayors of the Quad Cities, or maybe we should say the Quint Cities, since there are five Quad Cities, but all five of them met to discuss the future of the metropolitan area. How are things looking? What are they looking ahead to?
So many of the cities on the Illinois
Oh, and Daniel, I think we're losing your signal there. So are you back with us now?
Are looking at federal raise grants at this moment. And excuse me, the raise grant, who has raise grants. But Davenport was voted U.S. News and World Report's top 50 places to live. And part of that, I believe, is they've been successful in addressing some crime. For example, they've reduced shots fired incidents 67% through some mental health professional ride-along programs and also some violence intervention programs where community stakeholders will collaborate with police to speak with violent offenders, and it has caused only a 3% arrest rate in certain types of responses dealing with mental health. So that's been a success that Davenport has had. Some of that is transferring over to Rock Island, who has also adopted some of these programs. Rock Island, a big issue for them coming up, speaking of transportation, is they want the Centennial Bridge to align with 11th Street, which is possibly creating interstate through Rock Island, which is a historically isolated city when it comes to interstate.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna have to leave it there. Daniel Beathers from the Quad City Times, Brady Johnson from WVIK. Thank you both for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show. We're going to turn to politics when we return. Stay with us.